we finished our Hagos? Okay. Is anybody getting married in the next 2-3 weeks? Good. Okay, so now we'll go in order. So the next thing we discussed then, the first week, we discussed how a woman becomes a Nida. And the second week, we discussed the ramifications of a woman becoming a Nida, the Hagos, the laws of distancing. So now we go on to discuss how a woman...
Remember, it's 34 days of Hanukkah.
And
how many children in the Holocaust? Right? And how a woman leaves the state of being a Nida. So we will first go through a run through, just give you the different steps that are involved of a woman leaving the stage of Nida, and then we'll go and look at every single step very carefully. The first thing is that there must be a 5-day minimum from the time that the bleeding started. So if a woman stops bleeding, let's say she stopped bleeding today, so the first thing she has to concern herself with, has she bled for at least 5 days, or has at least spanned 5 days. So she counts back, and if she sees that today, Tuesday was the fifth day, or more, sixth or seventh, so then she has fulfilled that requirement, that's number one. And number two, then she'll go on to wash the pelvic area. And then three is she will do what we call a hefsek tara. A hefsek tara. Literally, that's a conclusion impurity. And what that is, it's a vaginal check. It takes a small piece of cloth and it probes the vaginal area. And that comes out clear. So then that means that she's... ready to start counting her 7 clean days after sunset. This is all being done as a preparation for the 7 clean days. So again, she number one is she makes sure she's at least 5 days since the onset of the bleeding. Number two, she washes the pelvic area. Number three, she does a vaginal check called the hefsek tara. Number four, and we're all still before sunset, she does what we call a mok dachuk, which literally means a pressed-in piece of cloth. Takes a small piece of cloth, just like a bezika cloth. Again, every single term we'll describe in great detail as we review. And she takes a small piece of cloth and she puts it into the vagina as if it was a tampon. And she leaves it inside the vagina at the very latest, a moment before sunset. And she leaves it in for about 20 minutes after sunset. And when she removes that and she inspects it and there's no bleeding on it, so then she knows that she now is into the 7 clean days that she requires in order for her to become Tahora. So step number 5 is to put on white undergarments, and she'll wear white undergarments for the next 7 days. Step number 6 is that for the next 7 days, she will do 2 vaginal checks a day. The vaginal checks are called bedikos. She'll do one in the morning after sunrise, and do one in the evening before sunset. And then, on the 7th day of the 7 clean days of the Shiva Nikiyim, she then prepares herself for mikveh. That preparation is called, usually referred to as a chafifa. And then the night after the 7 days are complete, she goes to mikveh. And then that's the 8 steps for her becoming Torah. Alright? So we'll explain each one of these. And we'll begin with the central part and the definitive part of the whole process, and that's counting the 7 clean days. So we're not going to go in chronological order. But it'll be easier for you to understand if we do it more in conceptual order. So the central, the core of this whole system of how this woman becomes tahora, becomes permissible to her husband, is counting 7 clean days. The background of that is that the Torah says that a woman, when she has uterine bleeding, can either be a nida or a zava. Right, we refer it to it always as Nida. We do not make these distinctions nowadays. But in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and in times to come, when we have the Beis HaMikdash back again, we'll go back to this distinction. A woman can either be a nida or a zava. When a woman menstruates on a regular basis and it's a natural monthly discharge, she's called a nida. To explain, nida either means to move, or it comes from the word dava, to feel ill, which often accompanies the onset. So that is when a woman is a nida. If a woman has intermenstrual bleeding, if she would bleed for 3 days straight in the first 11 days after menstruation has stopped, so from the Torah perspective, that's intermenstrual bleeding. It's unrelated to menstruation. She just finished menstruating. So for the next 11 days, we have a principle that comes from the Halacha Moshe Misina, that came from Sina, that those 11 days, if she bleeds then, that's not menstruation. So those 3 days, if she would bleed for 3 days straight, she'd be a Zava Gedola. And that is indicative of some kind of unusual discharge. That's indicative of some kind of illness. And that's why when we have the Beis Hamikdash back, if a woman has 3 days straight of bleeding within that period of time, she'll be a Zava, and she'll have to bring a Korban Chatas at the end. Because in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, when a person is ill, that's indicative of some kind of chayt. And we'll go to the Kohen to figure out what went wrong, and then when one does Shuvah, one will bring a Korban Chatas. So that's when a woman is a Zava. And the halacha is that when a woman is a nida, again we don't observe this nowadays, when a woman is a nida, she goes to mikveh 7 days after the onset or when the nida stops, whichever comes later. And there's a woman, when in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, if a woman bleeds for 5 days, she counts 2 more days and goes to mikveh. If she becomes a zava, then she has to count 7 clean days. So the Gemara says that this whole system became too confusing for women. Sometime in the period of the Gemara, it became too confusing to figure out if she was a Zav, if she's a Nida, if she just finished bleeding, she's in those 11 days. I assume there are various issues. Number one is that, let's say she began bleeding right around sunset. Is that 2 days? Is that 1 day? She began bleeding at the end of the 7th and into the 8th. Is that counted as a Zav, as a Nida? These are all very... So I assume that these things got women confused. And they became confused whether they have to keep 7 clean days or not. The Rishonim also point out that the rabbis in the time of the Beis Hamikdash could tell the difference between Zava blood and Nida blood. And we lost that ability. So we couldn't help the women out to figure things out. So the Gemara says that sometime in the period of the Gemara, the women accepted upon themselves that any kind of discharge, any time they have any kind of bleeding that makes them into either a zavos, they will conduct themselves as if they are zavos. Which means any time a woman has any kind of blood discharge that concerns us, so she will count 7 clean days. And even we discussed 2 weeks before Pesach, that if a woman has some kind of staining, so she becomes asura, prohibited to her husband, in her albonon, she still keeps the system of a zava, and that requires 7 clean days. So this all comes from the pasuk v'safra la. She counts to herself 7 days, and the Rishonim explain that this v'safra la is not like the sphere of Sfiras Omer. Sfiras Omer is counting each day. V'safra la, according to almost all Rishonim, is not counting. V'safra la is that she marks that period of time and is aware that the bleeding has stopped. The suffering means that she conducts herself in a way that she knows there's no kind of bleeding. Right? There is a minority view that a woman should in fact count those 7 days. Today is the first day of Mishnah Menachim, the second day of Mishnah Menachim. It's a minority view that we don't usually follow. And the truth is that women probably do it anyways, to some extent. But the idea of counting the Shiva Nikiyam is to be aware that for these 7 days she's not bleeding. How is she aware of it? She's gonna take off 7 days every single month, stay in bed, and be in tune with her body rhythms and see any kind of bleeding. So the Chassam Sefer Moshe Shriver explains that the Torah wants us to understand that we're not expecting her to sit still for 7 days to see if she's bleeding or not, but we have to figure out a way in which she can be aware of whether she's bleeding or not, and that's by doing vaginal checks, one in the morning and one in the one marking the end of the day. And when she does those vaginal checks and they come out clear, that is the way that she fulfills the obligation to be sure that there's no kind of bleeding. So that is the core of the whole system, counting these 7 clean days. And the way that we do it, it's the dikos, checks. And the way this is done practically is a small white piece of cloth, about 2 inches by 2 inches. And it has to be white, it has to be clean, should be soft. And she puts it on her talus finger, and she drapes it around the talus finger, and then she probes inside the vagina, pressing against the walls, and she inserts it. It's as deep as she can go without causing herself any kind of pain. And over the course of marriage, she'll be able to insert it much deeper. When she's before she's married, all women have to do this before they're married, because all of your kalos are nidos, because they've all menstruated. So before they're married, before you get married, she has to go to mikveh. Before she goes to mikveh, she has to count shiv nikiyim. She doesn't require the minimum 5 days, but she requires 7 clean days. So then she will not get in very far, because the area is still small, not stretched. Could be the hymen is still there, so she'll get in as far as she can. But once she's married, as you're married more and more, so she'll longer and longer, she'll be able to get a little bit further without hurting herself. And then when she removes the bedika cloth, the 8-day bedika, as we call it, she examines it and she makes sure that it has no problematic colors, which I'll explain in a moment. And then that's how she counts the 17 days, ideally one in the morning, one in the afternoon. There is no specific requirement as to where these cloths come from. They can come from, as long as they're clean and they're white and they're soft, they can come from any place. You can go to a fabric store and get the soft cotton and cut them up. More likely she'll get them from the mikveh. And she goes to mikveh, she'll purchase a pack of bedika cloth. But if you're traveling and she doesn't have her bedika cloth with her, so that she can go to any store and buy a handkerchief and wash it, because it'll be too hard if she doesn't wash it, or she can take an old undershirt of yours and cut it up. And if they are less than 2x2, then she may not cover the significant part of the vaginal opening. So that's why it's a good approximately, everything the proximal. And on the other end, if it's much larger, it'll bunch up and she won't be able to get inside. So that's why 2x2 is just a good average approximate. But again, there's no specific source. She can, any white cloth is fine. Alright? Now, what is she looking for? So she's looking for whether it's a problematic color or whether it's an acceptable color. Problematic colors are anything which has a red or reddish or black or blackish. Anything in the red family or black family are questionable colors. Anything which has which is red or pink or orange or rusty, any of those colors are problematic colors. And if it's black or if it's gray, also questionable and problematic colors. Things which are out of the ballpark of red, in other words, like lemon yellow, so we don't worry about that. If a blue would come, we would know it's from some other source. If a green would come, so it could be a sign of infection or something, but it wouldn't be an indication of bleeding. The colors that Rabbanim disagree, those are usually in the brown family. Different Rabbanim have different standards of when they say brown is a problem. Almost all Rabbanim will say, no, I shouldn't say that. When brown becomes a brownish blackish, like black coffee, like Coke, right? If you look at Coke under the light, it's brownish. If you look at Coke in the bottle without a light shining through it, it's blackish. So the brownish blackish colors, those are debated. Various Rabbanim take different positions on it. On the other hand, the tan brown, so that is, I think, universally accepted as not a problem. Right? So there are two, in general, in general, certainly when you're first married, you'll ask about any form of browns or any form of ambers or any form of gold. And then over time, the Rav, to be present the questions, will explain to you that he is or is not worried about these colors. Someone will say, this is a question, and either say it's a problem, or they'll say, it's not a problem, but I want you to ask this because it's a borderline. And sometimes the Rav will say, when you're first married, that this is not a problem, and you should feel comfortable making that decision on your own. So the range of what I'm telling you is that if it's a blue or a green, or if it's a lemon yellow, or if it's a tan brown, like coffee with a lot of milk in it, so those are things you shouldn't worry about bechlal. If it's a deeper, a richer brown, like an almond brown, like a coffee with a little bit of milk in it, if it's an amber or a gold, so I would want you to ask the Rav that you're going to ask your questions to, or the Rav that you're asking at that time, and ask him whether he's concerned about these colors, because every Rav is different. I can't tell you what positions they'll be taking. But in that area of colors, then you'll ask the Rav whether these are questions you should ask all the time. And then I would encourage you always to ask, even if it looks like a dark brown, still ask. And even if it looks black, you should ask. And even if it looks red, you should ask. And certainly if it's pinkish or if it's orange, all these things you should ask. And unless it's really a bright, bright red, like this red, so then barring that, it always pays to ask. The reason it pays to ask is because even in those areas of browns and blacks, the areas of certain kinds of reds, there is also a range. And your Rav may be lenient in those areas. And the other reason you should always ask is because most of the time when a woman looks at the colors, so she, and this also applies to the stains that we discussed 2 weeks ago, she will usually examine it under poor incandescent light. And that will always make things look more red. But incandescent light is the bulb or the filaments. So that is a higher level of red than fluorescent. Fluorescent is more the white light. And sunlight is in between fluorescent and incandescent. So the Chazal tell us, the rabbis tell us, that we should always be looking at these colors under sunlight. And I remember that was when I was training for this at Eretz Yisrael. So that was my first day on the job. And I was introduced to an older Rav. So he had 2 hours a day where women came to him and brought the dikos, and they brought any kind of shilas. And I would sit at the back in an adjacent room, usually the women's section, which was a separate room, and there was a window in between, and I would listen in. And then at the end of the 2 hours, I would come out, and he would say the various vidikos, and I would walk him home, and we'd discuss the issues that came up during the day, during his slot. But the very first day in the job is that he showed me the vidikos, and he looked at them, and I said, they look like, they look red to me. And he said, I need to hire them. And I said, they were okay. So then again, and I said, it looks red to me, it's not... And a very good way to start. So he said, now go outside. Because he had a window behind him. So he had the sunlight coming down. So I took him outside, and then it was like 12 o'clock in sunlight, and it was 12. So it was very clear it was brown. So a woman, when she looks at these things, often looks at in the bathroom with poor incandescent light, it'll look redder than it really is. So that's why it always pays to raise these questions to a Rav, unless it's mamish, a bright, bright red. Because sometimes it'll be very, very rare that a Rav will be more machmer than what appears to you. And it'll be fairly common that a Rav will be more makel. Then there are other factors that a Rav can sometimes apply just based on experience. Sometimes he'll notice that if there is something that's red, but it's really a foreign object. And he'll be able to show you that it's a foreign object. It's not... And that's just not a part of a discharge. So it always pays, in the barring the case where it's clearly a red blood stain, to raise a question to a Rav, and very often will be able to be makel, to be lenient. And different Rabbanim have different standards. Some Rabbanim, they have different standards, and they apply them with different approaches. For example, some Rabbanim will use the exact same standards from day number 1 through day 7. And other Rabbanim will be stricter during the first 3 days. And some Rabbanim will be stricter on the first day. And some will be stricter just with the Hefsek Tara. So these are all different approaches. And as you begin to ask these questions, that some women don't have any shalos, some women stop bleeding on a dime, have sektara, is clean, not a problem all the way through. And some women will have a shalos almost every single month. And most people will have a few shalos during the first year or two of marriage. And then once you get accustomed to it, so then you'll have fewer questions. And different Rabbanim work out different systems in which one can bring these questions. Right? These questions either come in bedikah cloth, or they could come in underwear, as we discussed in terms of ksamim. So different Rabbanim work out different ways to protect a woman's anonymity if she wishes. So there are, again, numerous ways, and it very much depends on your wife. If your wife is comfortable bringing the question, raising the question, fine. That's easy. If she prefers that you bring it over, fine. If she wants to bring it to the Rebbetzin, so most rabbis work it out that way as well. Most rabbanim who are involved in this will have a place where one can drop it off, a mailbox, and you can drop it off and just leave a phone number, and then one can maintain one's anonymity that way. So every rabbi works at it differently, and very often a woman will feel uncomfortable asking the rabbi her own shul. So she asks the rabbi another shul, and the rabbanim take care of different women of different shuls. So whatever makes women more comfortable. So sometimes the mikveh lady will be the conduit. We encourage women to feel comfortable. We encourage women to deal with this in the same way they would deal with a medical question. And we certainly, again, provide anonymity and try to make a woman as comfortable as possible bringing these questions. And which, again, the degree of frequency is really an unknown. But it is important to ask questions. There are two situations that we have to try to avoid with great effort. One is where a woman is being machmer in herself because she doesn't want to ask a shayla. She feels uncomfortable. So she'd rather be machmer than ask a shayla. So that we have to work on. Somehow we have to make this woman comfortable asking shayla. We have to figure that out. Right? And the other is where a woman has not took a kala class that said, that indicated to her that the cloth have to be clean. And many, many women out there who I don't know, maybe they read the Stone translation that you have to count 7 clean days. So there are many women who believe that the cloth has to be clean, piping clean. And if there's any smudge at all, then they will be machmir. And that just is not correct. It has to be clean of blood. But if there is other colors, as we indicated, then there's no room to be machmir, to be stringent in that area. Most of the time, a rav will only look at these things under sunlight. Some rabbanim are very, very experienced and know how to make how to compensate for artificial light, will do so. But the general approach that the rabbanim take is only sunlight, unless it is relevant for that night. Let's say a woman is supposed to go to mikveh tonight. So she did an afternoon bedika at 4 or 5 o'clock. By the time the rabbi gets home, it's already 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, it's dark. But she's supposed to go tonight. So in that case, the rabbi will take his best shot at it under artificial light. Or, for example, let's say the question comes up out of the blue. Comes up at a time when she's not a surah to her husband. Right? She got back from mikveh 4 or 5 days ago. And the question comes up at night, so then it's relevant for that couple where they can be together that night. So then too, a rabbi will take his best guess at artificial light and will very rarely be machmir under artificial light. If it looks bad, the rabbi will say, let's wait till sunlight, let's be strict tonight and take the worst possible outcome for tonight, and tomorrow we'll examine under sunlight. Alright? But if a rabbi can be makel under artificial light, certainly would try in these circumstances where it's relevant for that night. Right, so that's the counting of the 7 clean days.
Now, I described that a woman does, I described she has 16 vaginal checks, two for 7 days, and hefsek tara and mochdochuk. Right? But you have to realize that that is the ideal system. And that if we are in a situation where we're, a woman for some reason has missed numerous bedikos, so we will still tell her to go to mikveh as long as she has a hefsek tara, as long as she has one bedika on day one and one bedika on day seven. I want to discuss the latitude in this with greater detail. Let's focus on the seven clean days. Right, the seven clean days. So if a woman would mess up and she would miss the first day entirely, she did her hefsek tara, she forgot on the first day, probably she was busy with the children, or it was one of these winter days and she had a lot of things to do, happens. So if she misses her first day, then what we do is we say, take your day number, what would have been day number two, and make that into day one. And what would have been day eight, when she's already post-mikveh, make that into day seven. So she loses one day. Similarly, if she forgets day number seven entirely, so we'll do the same thing. We will restructure. She got from one through six. She forgot day seven entirely. And if she does one bedikah day one, not a problem. One bedikah day seven, not a problem. If she forgot day seven entirely, she doesn't have any bedikahs on day seven. So then we'll say, all right, what you thought was day number two becomes day number one. What was going to be day number eight now becomes day number seven. And of course, if there are extenuating circumstances, for example, if it's an issue of fertility that she has to catch that day, or the shalom bias issues, so then, or if she's scheduled to go away for the next 2 weeks in day eight, so these they have to ask her rav, and he has to look at it very carefully and see if there's room for any leniency. Now, coming back to the 7 days, so the 7 days, the ideal is two bedikos a day. But again, if any one bedik is missed, it won't matter at all. If any one day is missed from two, or if any day or days are missed between two and six, so that's not ideal at all, but we move on. She does not lose the count. Alright? If a woman is having difficulty, if she finds the bedikos irritative, so then we'll tell her, so just do one a day. That's an easy cooler to take. There are rabbanim and maybe some of you rabbeim who will tell you right away. They'll say that they take the position that one a day is fine even on a routine basis. So sometimes you can ask your own rav whether he insists on two a day lechadchila or whether he's happy with one a day lechadchila. All right. Most rabbanim require two a day, but please ask your own rav. All right. Again. But from day two through day six, if a day is missed, then that she'll just keep on counting. All right? And coming back to the woman who's having trouble, a woman who finds it irritative to do the bedikos, so again, she'll discuss it with the rav. The very first thing we'll say is don't do a mochdochuk. That will point out when you get to mochdochuk. But in terms of the 7 days, the rav will waive the second bedika on all the days or on some of the days. If a woman still finds that irritative, so then she'll discuss it with the rav and he will work out a schedule where she'll drop some of the days altogether. She'll do day one and day seven and some of the intermediary days depending on what the woman's needs are. Right? Or a rav may experiment. You know, may start with day one, three, and seven. If that works, then another few months, add in day one, three, five, and seven. So different approaches. I always try to keep day two in if possible, because the women who are most likely to forget day seven are the women who are not doing bedikas every single day. So when I have to waive a day of bedikas, I like to keep day two in if possible, because if she misses day seven, then I have day two to make into my day one. But if she did day one and skipped to day three or four, and then misses day seven, becomes a big problem. I'd help her out in that case. All right. So, any questions about the? Let me go a little bit further. If a woman is only doing one a day, and the rabbi told her just one a day, so I think the preference is to do the morning one. That's what Rabbi Vosner, who was one of the foremost posts from Bnei Brak, so he says to then do the morning one, because that's it's like Sfiras HaOmer. That's his logic. That Sfiras HaOmer we count at night. We try to count the earliest part of the night, so that we've counted the entirety of the day. So he figures the same thing should apply with Shivan Akiyam. Do the Badik in the morning, you've counted the entirety of the day. That's his logic. The afternoon Badika should be done probably sometime after Plaga Mincha. Again, in the ideal world, we probably would want to do it last half hour before sunset. But that would be foolhardy to leave anything for the last half hour before sunset, because that goes by very quickly, and it's very hard to catch that. Certainly if a woman is raising children, Baruch Hashem, it's very hard to catch, and certainly if she's in the office or she's in school. So I would never say try to catch the last half hour. What I would say is try to do it within Plaga Mincha, within the last hour and a quarter approximately of the day. Changes with the exactly an hour and a quarter, or a little bit less, a little bit more, changes with the time of year. But I would say somewhere around there, that's when she should do the ideal time for the afternoon Bedika. Alright? Got any questions about the Shivan Akiyam? Okay. So then, that being the next halach, yeah?
Hour and a quarter before Shkia?
Plaga Mincha, yeah.
Before Shkia?
Yeah. Before sunset, yeah.
Just in case of it, to get the last half hour?
No, it's because we have to find, it's not clear when the ideal time for the afternoon bedik is. So I think the lashon is samach l'shkia, so samach usually means half an hour. But practically speaking, if you advise half an hour, anybody's going to miss it most of the time. So the next demarcation we have is Plaga Mincha. And that's considered to be really an evening.
Until 20 minutes after.
No, till sunset.
But you don't have to wait after sunset?
No. The Bedikas are all done before sunset. Right, it's just that sektar that stays inside. Every other, it's just sorry, just the mochdachim. Every other bedika is in and out. Takes a few seconds. Right, and that it should be done before sunset. What happens if a woman misses sunset? So then we tell her do bedika first and ask later. Why is that? First of all, sometimes we're able to catch sunset. She doesn't realize it, but it's a few minutes later. And then there are different positions that various poskim, the various decides have taken as to what latitude there is after sunset. For example, I think it was Chief Pesach Frank, who was one of the chief rabbis of Yerushalayim, in the first chief rabbi of Yerushalayim? No. But he was an extraordinary personality. So he would permit about 5 minutes after sunset. And that's still within sunset. Some say seven. Rav Moshe Feinstein had an unusual maverick position of 9 minutes after Shkia. So that's why it always pays to do the Bedika if one's up against sunset. Instead of checking the clock first, do the Bedika first, check the clock later and figure you did it a minute before, and then ask the Rav whether you made it or not. Alright, because some rabbis allow a certain amount of latitude for Shkia, but it should be done before sunset, and that's part of the training of a young kala is to be sensitive to the sunset. If a woman is not as careful as she should be in terms of davening mincha, so she may not be as attuned to sunset as men are. So something that's important to keep in mind, that she has to sort of think in along those terms. Question is often raised, how involved are husbands in the counting of the Shivan Akiyam? Very much depends on just what the Kala wants, what one's wife wants. If she wants you to be involved in bringing questions to the Rav, good. If she wants you to be involved in reminding her, fine. But many women find it, get offended if the husbands remind her to do Bedikos. So this is the one halacha that is clearly placed as a woman's obligation. The Safra La, she counts to herself. And it's the source of Eid Echad Envi Surin, that she's entirely trusted in this area. In fact, it's probably the way that the Torah introduces into married life the absolute necessity for trust between husband and wife. That's an absolute and non-negotiable requirement of the relationship of husband and wife. However, there are many women who feel uncomfortable. They don't want their husbands to remind them. Fine, so then you take your leave that way. I would just suggest that it's worthwhile reminding one's wife gently on day 1 and day 7, or if you know that the Hesek Tavra is supposed to be taking place. So, because those are the crucial ones, that if they're not done, then you could lose a day. So know that unless your wife is sensitive about it, those are the days that I would suggest are worthwhile reminding one's wife. But otherwise, one should follow one's wife's lead. And one certainly shouldn't be checking up on one's wife. Trust your wife and she'll carry out her responsibility. The Shiv and the Kiyam, in addition to the vaginal checks, we have a minhag that the women wear white tight-fitting underwear during the 7 clean days. This comes from that the Gemara says that women, when they were counting the 7 clean days, wore totally white. They were white with the 7 levanim, 7 days of white. They would wear white skirts and white socks and probably white slippers, or shoes, and at night they would have white sheets and white pillowcase. Everything was white. So nowadays we say that since we have white tight-fitting underwear, that if there's any discharges, it'll be caught by the underwear. So we don't insist that everything else is white. So we needn't have white sheets and white pillowcase. If a woman is uncomfortable, if she's uncomfortable at night wearing white undergarments, so then she'd have to tackle wear a white nightgown and a white pillowcase and white sheets, just go all the way. But if she's comfortable with the white tight-fitting underwear, so then that would be permissible to use that during the Shiva Nikim. And the colors that come up on the undergarments are the same as we discussed before. And the size of stain that would concern us is the same that we discussed 2 weeks ago. That it has to be the size of a penny in order to be concerned about it. Exactly how one conjoins multiple spots, so that we'll have to discuss with the Rav. Okay? Now, to begin the Shiv Nikiyam, so working backwards, right? We did, I guess, step number 6, and we did step number 5. But to begin the Shiv Nikiyam, so a woman has to do what's called the Hefsek Tara. Now, the Hefsek Tara is, in effect, a Bidika. The reason why it gets a special name is probably for 2 reasons. One is because it's done with a little bit more care than a regular bidika. The woman inserts it a little bit more slowly, presses against the vaginal walls to make sure that if any blood was caught in the crevices of the vaginal wall, so then it would be picked up. And she removes it once again, pressing against the vaginal walls in a circular motion, and again inspecting it the way she inspected the cloth that we discussed a few minutes ago. All right, why is it called Hefsek Tara? Is because in halacha, once you set up a chazaka, once you establish that a person is no longer bleeding, that becomes her chazaka. She has the status of having completed menstruation. So since this is a pivotal vaginal check that allows us to begin the 7 clean days, so that's why it earns its special name. And the name Hefsek Tara, conclusion impurity, probably means that day number zero was already concluded impurity. In other words, that when she begins the first day of the Shemini Kiyum, sunset, which initiates the first day of the seven clean days, she knows she's already completed the day before, already clear, already kind of bleeding. She was mafsik b'tara. She can finish that day having stopped bleeding with a new chazaka, what we say in the Gemara, mayono sosum, her well is, the tap is dry. The well has been closed. And she begins the Shiva Nikiyim then after the after sunset following the Hefsek Tara. Alright? But again, the Hefsek Tara is same thing, if Eide Bedika, white cloth, and should be clean, and hopefully is soft, and brought in as far as she can go. If a woman is having difficulty with any of these bedikos, so we discussed waving them before, another approach that a rav may take is to make the bedika damp. Can't make it sopping wet, because then it'll just clean and won't indicate anything. But to make it damp and pat it dry, so it's a little bit damp, and then in extreme cases, a rav may allow a woman to use a certain kinds of lubricants. Usually KY gel, because it is because it has the same kind of absorption as the vaginal fluids. So therefore, Rabbanim assume that again it will not wipe dry, but will rather pick up anything that's there. So again, making it damp, you know, I would do without hesitation if it makes the woman more comfortable. The KY gel is I would. First, want to experiment with water before doing the KY gel, and if one would go either of those routes, so one has to pat it dry in the extent of the water, and with the KY gel, an extremely, extremely thin layer of gel, because you don't want to clean the inside, you want to, again, test to see that anything's there. Many women ask if they can use tampons. So I would discourage the use of tampons for two reasons. One is, tampons often shed, and therefore leave a layer inside. So you may not be getting the examination which Chazal had in mind. And the other reason is that tampons often collect things in the depth of the cotton, and therefore they often look darker than they really are. So if a rov looks at it, he'll pull it apart and look at it carefully. But sometimes a woman may look at it and be discouraged and not bring it to a rov. So I would discourage the use of tampons. Alright? So far, again, we discussed the seven clean days, and that is marked by the Shiva Nikim, or the white undergarments, and by the Hefsek Tara. Alright?
When exactly the Hefsek Tara is on, sometimes during the day?
Hefsek Tara is a good question. Hefsek Tara is the same as the afternoon Bedika. And that it should be done probably within an hour and a quarter before sunset. But what's important to realize is that if Hefsek Tara is done earlier in the day and comes out clean and there isn't any subsequent bleeding, then that Hefsek Tara will be acceptable b'di'avad. Right? So therefore, let's say a woman did Hefsek Tara at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. So we will tell her, well, do another Hefsek Tara in the afternoon, with an hour before sunset, right, at the right time. But let's say a woman has forgotten to do her afternoon Hefsek Tara, but she has one from 12 o'clock in the afternoon. So we will work with it. But the oven will be entirely acceptable. And she can begin the Shiva Nikiyim, because after all, she established a Chazaka. She stopped bleeding. That's why I would counsel all women that if they know, they wake up on a Wednesday morning, and it's already the fifth day from Shiva Nikiyim, fifth day from the onset, and they know they're going to be doing Hefsek Tara Wednesday afternoon. So I would counsel a woman to do the Hefsek Tara in the morning before they go to work, or before they leave the house, or before they get involved with the children, and then do another one in the afternoon. The reason being is that if she would forget the one in the afternoon, then she'll be able to fall back on the one in the morning. So she already has her her default position. So it's worthwhile. I would not be somech in the morning of Sektara L'chanchila, but to have that as a backup is certainly worthwhile. And now you see some Sfarim write this as well. Alright, so now we have to discuss the Moch Dochuk, right? The Moch Dochuk is an unusual phenomena in Halacha, right? Again, practically speaking, the Moch Dochuk is a bedikah cloth that is inserted in the vagina of some time before sunset and left inside like a tampon from till about 20 minutes after sunset. All right, for this, if a woman wants to use a tampon, that'd be fine. Right? Now the moch dochuk just means a pressed piece of cloth. Now the moch dochuk, when I said it's an unusual phenomena, is because it is a codified stringency. It's a codified chumrus. It's a very strange bird. Sometimes you have chumrus that we take on stringencies. And of course you have halacha that's codified. That Shulchan Aruch has got to do. Over here, Shulchan Aruch, the code encourages doing a moch dochuk as a chumrah. The Shulchan Aruch says it's a good idea, a wise idea to be machmir and do the moch dochuk. So it's a strange thing. There are rabbanim, and you can discuss with your own rav, who tell chassanim and kalis not to do a moch dochuk. They say it's a chumrah, could cause some bleeding, some little scratch, don't do it. My own training is that we tell women to do the moch dochuk. However, if it causes any trouble at all, so then that's the first thing to be waived because it's a chumrah. Again, what's the moch dochuk in practical? That she puts in another bedikah cloth and she leaves it inside for the next 20 minutes and removes it 20 minutes later and looks at it and sees with any bleeding or not. No bleeding, nothing, it's clean, clean of blood, clean of any blackish or reddish. So then she will begin counting the Shiva Nikim. Alright? But if if it's a problem, then she'll raise it to Rav and we'll discuss whether it's a problem or not. Alright? If a woman is having trouble doing any of the bedikos, so again, the very first thing that we will dismiss is the moch dochuk. And if a woman is having trouble with the moch dochuk, and she finds it irritative and it's scratching her, so again, that's the very first thing that we will dispense with. Alright, so that's the moch dochuk. Now the reason why we said it's 20 minutes, we never use 20 minutes for anything. So is because since it is a chumrah, normally we say that say it's about 42 minutes after sunset, or 50 minutes after sunset. This is for Shabbos, for Yom Kippur. Over here, since the moch dochuk is a chumrah to begin with, so we take a more lenient approach and allow. Hello, Yaakov Neuber, can you call? Kind of thing that if you're a foot away, you would not be able to notice it? Yeah, okay, then I wouldn't. And the mikveh attendant didn't notice it, because the mikveh attendant did not notice it. What was that? Good. Okay. So don't. Yeah. Okay. Good. 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 So no, not a problem. Let her go. Okay. Call to. Bye bye. So the so that's why if it's because it's a chumrah, it's the very first thing that we would waive, and that's and again only give about 20 minutes. And again, if the machdochah gets forgotten, then it's a non-issue. If the esek tavra gets forgotten, she does not begin counting shivin akiyim. If she forgot to put on white undergarments, we just that will not impact on the 7 days. She's allowed to just continue, right? The only things that will stop the 7 clean days are hefsek tara. If she forgot the first day and forgot the 7th day, or if she comes up with if there's some kind of bleeding, if the bedikah cloth comes up with a bad color, then the undergarments come with a bad color. If the bedikahs come up with a bad color, then she goes back to the hefsek tara. Right, that's the point where she loops back into. Now sometimes a woman will try to do several hefsek taras in a row. Right? In other words, she'll do hefsek tara and it comes out reddish. So she'll do another hefsek tara. So and if that comes out reddish, another hefsek tara. So in this case, what I would suggest is the following. First of all, ideally, she should give herself about 12 to 15 minutes in between hefsek tara attempts. So she should begin a little bit, hefsek tara is worthwhile starting a little bit earlier, not to leave it up to sunset. Again, an hour earlier or so. So ideally, we would want her to give her a little bit of time in between each one. If it's impossible, all right, so she can do a little bit closer together. Number two is that whereas on one end it's so if she's doing a smart thing by trying to get a clean hefsek tara and it may save her the day, on the other hand it's important that she shouldn't drive herself crazy and if she shouldn't scratch herself. There's too many bedikos hefsek taras one after the other. The inside of the vagina, they tell me, like the inside of their mouth, it's the same kind of some kind of tissue. It's very wet, so you know that if you rub and rub and rub against the inside of the mouth, so you'll end up creating a dry spot and end up creating a sore. So the same thing with the vaginal, with the inside of the vagina, we would discourage a woman from going bananas. You know, do two, do three, four, whatever, but she shouldn't drive herself crazy. She shouldn't go over and over and over. Number one, she'll just drive herself batty. And number two, she'll end up scratching herself and causing herself to bleed and she won't get anywhere. Right, so the so with the hefsek tara, she can try a few times. I do at least some time in between. When it comes to, let's say, if it's the second day of the shivin akiyim and she has a question, so she has to use a judgment whether she should do another hefsek tara or not, because maybe it's just a gamble. Let's say she does the bedikah on the second day of shivin akiyim and she just sees it's red. So it would make sense to do hefsek tara. If she can, to wait 10, 12 minutes. If she can, do it in a little less time. Do hefsek tara because she'll be able to gain the day. Most shilas which come up during the first 2 days, maybe 3 days of shivin akiyim. It's rare that questions come up beyond the 3 days. Happens, but it's rare. When it happens, it's usually with a woman who's a little bit older and some kind of unusual staining. If a person is traveling, so again, nowadays there are bottom all over the place. In addition, between FedEx and and Priority Mail, one can usually get a shayla to a rav within 2 days, so you can easily. And most of the questions come at the beginning of the shivin akiyim. Alternatively, if that's not an option for every reason, or you're in a place where there's no rav and it's towards the end of shivin akiyim, you don't have a chance mailing it, so then what you would do is call a rav and you would compare the color to other standard colors. And then that's how you'd work it out. Okay, you had a question before.
Yeah,
Took care of it? Good, good.
Does it make any time difference between that and Tara and Moch? Or can you do that one after another?
It can be done, Moch has to be done a moment before sunset at the very latest, but a few minutes before sunset also. But it can be done right after a Hefsek Tara.
Does he get the Hefsek when you do the Moch? Would that count as a Hefsek?
If a person let's ask the following question. If a person does the Hefsek and does the Moch and then looks at both of them and sees that the Hefsek has a questionable color, but the Moch is entirely clear. So that's the machlokas of poskim, whether the Moch can function as a Hefsek Tara. When I posed this question to one of the great poskim in America, so he said that he took the position that one can use a Moch in place, in this case, one would be Mekel in this case. Right? One's own Rebbe may take a different position. The question is whether a Hefsek Tara, or the Moch Dochik is as efficient as a Hefsek Tara. Because it's not pressed against the walls. But that's a discussion. Some make on some remark for that.
Why don't we do a Moch Dochik if you avoid the test on Hefsek
Tara? Could be for numerous reasons. The one is you weren't sure. So you put aside to ask. Right, or you're in such a rush that you just put it aside, put a Moch Dochik and look at it all later on. All right, okay. So now, just before the Hefsek Tara, one does the pelvic wash, right? And that's the pelvic wash is almost entirely just as a practical tool to make sure that there's no dried blood in the area, which will come out a few days later. We wash the pelvic area in case there's some dried menstrual blood there, so we're afraid that maybe it'll become loose on the third day of Shivan Nikiyam. So here you have, she had some dried blood that was there from the period. It's going to become coming under Bika cloth 3 days later. So that's where we wash the pelvic area. Alright? Now, and that's why if a woman is unable to do the pelvic wash, she can still do a Hefsek Tara and a Moch Dochik. In other words, let's say a woman leaves in the morning and she's pretty sure she'll bleed for another day. And then comes 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 o'clock, and she sees the bleeding stop, but she's downtown. So there's no way she can do a pelvic wash, but she can go to the bathroom and do a Hefsek Tara. So then we would still say do the Hefsek Tara. And hope for the best. Alright? So we've covered now steps 2 through 7. Right? What's left is the 5-day minimum. Right? She has to wait a 5-day minimum. Where does that come from? So the base of this is that I only presented I left out an important detail. That when we say that a woman has to make sure that the days are clean of any kind of bleeding, the Gemara says it has to be clean of bleeding and clean of any kind of residual seminal discharge. What's called in halacha a pleitas shichva zera. Right? Pleitas shichva zera means husband and wife are together, and there's some zera that is left in the vaginal area and the nooks and crannies of the folds of the vaginal the vagina, and somehow maybe she's a very very light period, so it washed by without getting rid of the zera, and then the zera discharges itself during the Shivan Nikiyam. So the halacha is that would disrupt the Shivan Nikiyam. Pleitas shichva zera would make a woman that would get in the way. Now, pleita shichva zera does not, if a woman would have some kind of seminal discharge on the second day of Shivan Nikiyam, it would not send her back to Hefsek Tara in the way that blood would. It's just she loses that particular day. Day 2 becomes blocked out, and day 3 becomes day 2. Right? So, for example, this has become a very significant question if a woman has to undergo insemination. Right? Sometimes, let's say a woman has a short ovulatory cycle. So let's say a woman would ovulate before she goes to mikveh. Right, we'll discuss later on different approaches. But one approach would be to do artificial insemination. Use the zera of the husband and with a syringe and a catheter insert it into the uterine cavity and Yirtzeh Hashem will be successful. All right? However, we may have to do this during the Shiva Nikiyam. Because the reason why they're not together is because she hasn't gone to mikveh yet. Right? So certainly most non-Hasidic poskim allow this and don't see a problem in it because she's not engaging in any kind of relations during Shiva Nikiyam. She's not Torah. She's simply absorbing the Zera. So most non-Hasidic poskim follow Moshe Feinstein's Psak and Meikel. And truth is, the Hasidic poskim are also coming around to this position as well. So now, the question is, would she, over the next day or two, may have some residual seminal discharge? So the semen that most semen may roll out. This is, when this is done, it's usually done on, let's say, the sixth day of Shiva Nikiyam. That's what usually happens. That's the way it works out. That she's ovulating on the 56th day, so they do this insemination 56th day. There are rabbanim, the machlokas of poskim, whether we have to be worried about pleita shichva zera. The some rabbanim will say that the semen is deposited so deep into the vaginal cavity that it's not like relations. Another rabbanim say, what do we know? It's semen is being injected and it rolls out. We got to be concerned about it. So that's why, if Rabbanim are concerned about it, they would say, "Well, if it happens on day six, so you can't count day six, right? And you can't count, and you can't count the next 4 days. So day six is not counted. Day seven, day eight, day nine, day ten becomes day six." Right, as opposed to if blood would show up on day six, so then day six would become day zero, and day seven of the earth would become day one. Whereas if it's an issue of pleita shichva zera, she would lose 4 days, and then the next day would just pick up a count from there. So as we said, day six, seven, eight, nine would not be counted, and day ten would become day seven. Day ten would become day six. Day 11, day 7. Alright? But coming back to the source, I'll just give an illustration of how it works. Coming back to the source, is that the Torah says, the Sofrala, she counts herself 7 clean days, clean of any bleeding that we discussed. Clean of residual seminal discharge, pleita shichva zera. Right? Even though it sounds hard to understand what's going to come after a period, that's what we're concerned about. Now, since it is almost impossible to know whether a discharge is zera, how is she going to know whether it's some kind of lubricant or whether it's some kind of normal body discharge or whether it's zera? She comes across a clear liquid, why does she know what she's going to know? So, there was a time when these people used to wash themselves, the Sfaradim, out of Yom HaZeh, I think. The Mechaber says that she should wash them very, very carefully, and that's how she'll get rid of any zera. And the Ramah says that we don't know these things. And ain't no nubikim, we don't know. So therefore, the approach of the Rishonim was to wait 4 days from the onset. In other words, that not to begin counting Shiva Nikiyam until you're on the fourth day. Why the fourth day? Well, we learned that Zera maintains its integrity for 3 full days, for 72 hours. We know this from Matan Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to schedule Matan Torah to be on Friday, right? The way it is this year. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, let's wait till Shabbos. Why did they wait till Shabbos? The Gemara explains. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu that husbands and wives should separate from each other as of Wednesday. So Moshe Rabbeinu made the following cheshbon. that all the men will be free of any kind of tumah. Because even if they were with their wives on Tuesday night, they'll still be able to go to mikveh on Friday, maybe the latest Shabbos morning. They'll all attend Matan Torah. But if a woman would have a plate to Shechva Zera, so she, and if Matan Torah is on Friday, right, and she had a plate to Shechva Zera, and she was with her husband last Tuesday night, right? So she could easily have a plate to Shechva Zera still Thursday night. She won't make it to Matan Torah, she won't be able to go to mikveh, and have a sunset before Matan Torah. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu took the initiative to push Matan Torah off one more day in order to make sure that all women can attend Har Sinai. So from there we see that Zera maintains itself for approximately 72 hours. Approximately three full days. We call it six full onos. After that, as far as Allah is concerned, it is not called Zera. Right? It may look like Zera, maybe physiologically it's like salt, it's blood after salting. You have a chicken that you bought from a kosher place, and they kosher it, and they salt it, and they kosher it, so you have red liquid all over the place. Physiologically, it's probably blood. Looks like blood. Al pidin, any physiological blood that has survived salting is not called blood. Al pidin is not blood. The same thing over here. That al pidin, this is not called zera. So therefore, the din was accepted by the Ashkenazi Rishonim that a woman should wait 4 days. Because the only way that she'll get 3 complete days is if she waits 4 days. In other words, a woman has her onset on a Monday night. Right? So we have to assume that she could have been with her husband Monday night as well. Right? So we assume that Monday night to Tuesday night to Wednesday night to Thursday night. Right? That's 3 full hours. That's 72 hours. But she's not going to do Hefsek Tara till it's before sunset on Thursday. Right? She's not going to count till Friday, being day number one. So we tell her, look, you got your onset on Monday night, it's Tuesday, so count Tuesday as day one, Wednesday as day two, Thursday as day three, and Friday as day four, and then she'll do her Hefsek Tara on day number four. But that way she's included a complete 72 hours. Right? She got her onset Monday night, so Monday to Tuesday, Tuesday is the Wednesday to Thursday. Thursday night will be 72 hours, but maybe a second before. But she can't do anything till Friday at sunset, because she has to be able to count complete days. Once, what we're afraid of is that she can't do a bidika on Wednesday afternoon. Because if it comes up with the whitest discharge, she has to assume this is still Zera. So we say, wait till it's 72 hours over. It's Thursday already. Well, Thursday night, she can't do a Hefsek Tara until Friday afternoon because it's all one day. So we tell the women, count 4 days. We say 5 days, but that's how I'll tell you how it develops in a moment. So the din was, Ashkenazi Rishonim said, tell women that they should count at least 4 days from the onset. And then the fourth day can already be day number zero, Hefsek Tara. In effect, this is not going to matter much to women because most women bleed for 5 days. How do we come to the 5 day minimum? All right. Why 5 days? It should only be 4 days. So this is a chumrah. You have to appreciate the development so you understand why there is some latitude. This is a chumrah of the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen was one of the late Bali Atosfos. And the Ramah records the Trumas Hadeshen. And you'll listen to it and you'll say, it's a wild chumrah. And it probably is a wild chumrah. And the only reason that it got so widely accepted is because it really doesn't impact on most people. The vast majority the vast majority, overwhelming majority of women bleed for about 5 days. So the Truma Tadeshan, when he insisted on a 5-day minimum, really didn't impact on women. Alright? But where did he come to the 5-day minimum? Alright? So you have to think along with me. I don't have a blackboard anymore. So the Truma Tadeshan was afraid of the following situation. That a husband and wife would spend time together in a Sunday afternoon. They would fall asleep together. Sunday night, they would wake up, and she would find herself already she began her period. Alright? She assumes that they were together Sunday afternoon. And she assumes the bleeding began Sunday afternoon. In fact, everything happened Sunday night. Alright? So, in her mind, the Truma Sadesh was afraid of the following scenario. That in her mind, what she will do, she'll say, Sunday is day one. Before sunset. A minute before sunset already makes it as day number one. Alright? Sunday night, Monday, day two. Monday night, Tuesday, day three. Right? Tuesday night, Wednesday, day four. Alright? So, minimum 4 days. She'll do her hefsek tara on, what do we say, Wednesday afternoon, day number four. Right? It may come out with a white little disc, and she'll say, well, it's not a problem. I've done my 4-day minimum. I'm well past the 72 hours. No? So then she'll count, Thursday is day number one of the Shiva Nikiyam. Truma Sadeshan was afraid what really happened. They were together Sunday night. She got her onset Sunday night. So in fact, Sunday night, Monday is day one. Monday night, Tuesday, day two. Tuesday night, Wednesday, day three. She's still within 72 hours. That white discharge was Zera. She shouldn't have counted as Shiva. She's a bad Asiktara. She's going to go to Mikveh day early. Why is it a wild Chumrah? Number one, let's make it the minimum of 5 days. It says the Truma Sadeshan, wait 5 days to cover for this situation. Why is it a wild Chumrah? Number one, we'll learn in a few weeks that Chazal strongly discouraged having relations during the day. So it's covering for a situation that shouldn't have happened to begin with. And number two, it's an unusual situation. We don't make didim derabbanan, rabbinic rulings for unusual situations. So here, how the Truma Sadeshan is worried about a couple that'll be together still in the afternoon, fall asleep, wake up, and for all those things to happen, and dafka then she gets her onset. So a lot of things have to come together. So it's a very significant chumrah. Different Sephardi communities, some did not accept it. Some did not, some did, and some went further than one 6 days. 6 days minimum. So if a person has Sephardi minhagim, one has to ask your Rav as to what you're going to be following. However, the common Ashkenazi approach, and the common Sephardi approach also now, is to keep a 5-day minimum. Right? Again, for the vast majority of situations, it will not impact on anybody at all because a woman bleeds for 5 days. So it's very rare that a woman gets the Hefsek Tara in less than 5 days. Alright? However, because it is a very significant Chumrah, if your wife is in the situation where she in fact bleeds for less than 5 days, then you have to be attuned to several situations where we are makel. Right, one situation which will impact on almost, almost all you will have and will not impact on most of you, is that we discussed the first time we met that dam besulim, right, that hymenal bleeding makes a woman to a nida. Hymenal bleeding will only last for a day or two. So therefore the common minhag is that a kala only has to wait 4 days for hymenal bleeding. Number one, because the chances of a kala and a chassan being together in the afternoon are remote. And number two, even if they had a morning or afternoon wedding. And number two, because in this case it has real impact. She'll only bleed for 2 or 3 days, maximum, or probably 2 days. So making her wait the 5th day is a real chumrah. So therefore the achronim say don't apply it. Now for most of you it'll be irrelevant because most of you, your kalas will probably have their periods 3 or 4 days after you get married. Right? But that's one of the situations where in theory we apply, we release ourselves from the Truma Sadeshan. Right? There are a few other situations where we make ill against the Trumas Hadeshin. Let me just explain it. And the reason why I wanted you to understand the development of the 3, 4, 5 is because if you are in a situation where you will be lenient against the Trumas Hadeshin, you should appreciate you're being lenient against a very significant Chumra, and that's why it's that's why it's available to you, and you should ask a Shaila. One common situation is that if a couple is Rachmana Litzlan having trouble having children, so the first thing that a doctor will look at, if he is an all attuned to the Orthodox community, is to see that maybe the woman is going to mikveh after ovulation. Right? That's the first thing that, if he's clueless about the Orthodox community, then he'll be unnecessarily running this woman through many tests before he, right? But if he knows what's going on, or if the couple came to the rabbi first, the rabbi gave the doctor the heads up, the first thing he'll check out is, number one, is she ovulating? That's number one. And when is she ovulating? Before or after she goes to mikveh. Now let's say this woman is ovulating a day after she goes to mikveh. Right? So very often that woman has a shorter period. Very often if we could get that woman on her 7 clean days a day early, she'll get to mikveh a day early. So that would be one situation where we would waive the Trumas Hadeshin's requirement and begin the 7 days a day early. Alright? Another situation, less dramatic. Let's say the husband is going to be traveling away for several days and he's leaving on Leil Tevila, the night that she's supposed to come back from Mikveh. So if this woman bleeds for 5 days, what do we do for her? She can't begin the Shiva Nikim because she's bleeding. Then the husband has to try very hard to change his flight so he'll be home for Leil Tevila. But let's say this woman happens to be a woman who only bleeds for 3 days. So for her, it's the Trumas Hadeshin which is causing her to mikveh on that particular night when her husband is flying out. So in that case, he would say, begin the Shiva Nikim a day early. Right? So if there are unusual circumstances, let's say for some reason a woman has had periods in close clipping with each other, a woman has unusual staining or something, so she's afraid that she comes back from mikveh, she'll right away become a need again. So those are situations where a person has to raise to a rav whether she can begin the Shiva Nikim a day early, but they all have to be raised right away as soon as she becomes a nida. A woman cannot, if a woman comes to a rav on the 5th day of Shiva Nikim and says, it's important for me to go to mikveh a day early, and would I have begun my 17 days, I would have gotten a good hefsek tara, and I could have begun a day early, it won't help at all. Right? The decision has to be made when a woman has just begun her menstruation, so we can in fact begin the Shiva Nikim a day early. So if a chosan or kalav, a husband or wife, believe that it is important for them, for the woman to go to mikveh a day early, and if she's a woman who bleeds for less than 5 days, for less than 4 days, so therefore the Trumas Hadeshin is having an impact on her, so in that case one would ask a rav a question whether in fact she can begin the Shiva Nikim early. But again, the question has to be asked at the beginning, which would in fact allow her to start a day early and not once the Shiva Nikim are in progress already. Alright, any questions about the minimum of the 5 day minimum? But that's the what I want you to walk away with, is that if a woman bleeds for a very short period of time, and for her this particular situation, this particular month, it might be important for her to go a day early, then we should ask a question. Very often the answer will be no. Trumas Hadeshin is minig Yisrael. And sometimes, for unusual circumstances, one will be able to be lenient in that chumra.
Starting the counting,
it always goes
by Shkia. Let's say a woman
before Shkia,
the first day.
Yeah, I mean, she starts a second before Shkia.
You use Moshe's Kula for 9 minutes, and also the first day.
That's the way it runs.
because it doesn't bleed 9 minutes after, within the 9 minutes after Shkia.
Oh, we still move it up. I don't think I would do that. But I think that it's worthwhile asking. But it's something else. Let's say a woman finds herself an hour after sunset in a very significant bleeding already. And she knows that the way her body works, that really began before sunset. Then she projects it back. All right. Your question is not a bad question. I would think that if you'd say it's within 5 minutes, so then that might not be a bad idea. If it makes a difference, all right? Okay. So I apologize again for starting so late. It was my usually. The parking that we use is usually available, but I found it unavailable until I was already in, so I had to back out, so it took a little bit longer, and I found another lot. Okay, so Mitzvah next week we'll begin with Chafifa, discussing the preparation for Mikvah. Good, let's have a Mara, okay?